Well, a popular preacher from the north of the country has been crucified, and some of his followers are in Jerusalem, and they cause quite a stir when suddenly crowds from all over the region hear them talking about Jesus in their own language. And great interest is caused by this. And so, verse 14, Peter, standing with 11, lift up his voice and addressed them. Peter begins by dealing with their accusation that the men are drunk. He says, look, that's ridiculous. It's far too early in the morning for that to have happened. He then says, in order to explain this, we're going to go back to what the prophet Joel said. Now, in doing that, Peter was just following what Jesus had done. In Luke 24, when Jesus is with the disciples in the upper room, and they don't understand what has happened or why it's happened, what does he do? Jesus said to them, these are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. So as Peter had experienced that for himself, so he explains what is going on now to the crowd through the prophet Joel. He'll do the same thing a bit later on. Chapter 3, let me read to you. And all the prophets, Peter says, who have spoken from Samuel and those who came after him also proclaimed these days. So if you want us to understand what God is doing, you need to listen to what God has said. He's prepared you for this present day by what he has said in the past. And here we have a few verses from Joel chapter 2. Joel was a prophet who prepared Israel for God's coming judgment, often called the Day of the Lord by the prophets. He says God will do something, pour out his spirit. People will then do something. They will prophesy, and that will result in people calling on God for their salvation. Let's just take a moment to pause and think how prophecy works. Here's somewhere that I love walking. It's the Ribblehead Viaduct in the Yorkshire Dales, looking towards Ingleborough. But one of the realities of walking in the hills is that you get this effect. As you climb up Peak 1, you see the top, and you think, brilliant, got to the top. What happens when you get to the top of Peak 1? You see Peak 2, and as you climb up Peak 2, you see, brilliant, got to the top. But what happens when you get to the top of Peak 2 is you suddenly discover that you haven't got to the summit at all. The summit is the top of Peak 3, and you've got to go a lot further on still. Well, next time you're slogging up a hill, just remember that what you're doing is living out an illustration, because that's how prophecy works. Peak 1 is the fulfillment of the prophet's words, either in his own day or not too long after in Israel's history. Oh, Peak 2 is the fulfillment at Jesus' first coming. And Peak 3 is the fulfillment at Jesus' return. Three peaks, each one we need to climb to understand what's going on. Now, let's look at three key ideas in these opening few verses of the Acts and see how they work out in terms of the three peaks. Back in chapter 1, you'll remember, the disciples say to Jesus, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? What did they mean by kingdom? What does kingdom mean? Well, before Jesus comes, kingdom means the physical, geographical land of Israel, ruled over by an earthly king and secured by victory over enemies, other armies and nations, tribes, all that sort of thing. after Jesus has come, for us today, what it means is living under Jesus' rule, knowing that he is the one from whom we've received forgiveness as we look to the future. And what does it mean in eternity? It means the coming of the new heavens and the new earth. It means all believers being given new bodies. And it means the end of all the enemies, including death. That's kingdom. What about the last days? In this passage, we've heard talk of the last days. What do the last days mean? Well, before Jesus, people thought it was going to be one single future event. It was essentially judgment coming after each one had been raised. Today we understand it rather differently. The New Testament talks about it as that period of time between Jesus' life, death, resurrection, ascension, and his return. We live in the last days. And of course, the last days give way to the eternal future. They come to an end as Jesus returns. Now, what about revelation? What about how do we know God? How do we hear from God? Because that's key in the passage we're going to look at in a moment. Well, before Jesus, that came through the prophets. And it came through dreams and visions as well. The writer of the Hebrews says it came in many and various ways. After all, even in one instance, God uses a donkey. All manner of ways God spoke. But once Jesus, the living word, has come, we know about God through the work of the Spirit inspiring the apostles, and we know from the writings that we hold in our hand as we call the Bible, Old and New Testament, together. And what about in eternity? Well, of course, then as Paul puts it, we will know as we've been known. We'll see Jesus face to face. Nothing will be hidden from us. Everything will become clear. So I hope that helps you, just to see how prophecy works and just to see how those three important ingredients here in these opening verses of the Acts work with that prophetic framework. And more importantly then, how do these things help us in our mission? How do they help us to better understand the mission that we're called to? First of all then, verses 14 to 16, the mission will be led by the apostles. But Peter, standing up with the 11, lifted up his voice. You'll remember from last time that the Spirit was given to the 120, to all those who were gathered together in the room. And it was the 120 who spoke in the different languages about the mighty works of God that Jesus had accomplished. But now we're in public. Now we're out in the open, if you like. And now it is Peter who takes the lead, who stands with the 11. The leaders front up. They're out there. It's a bit like the general election campaign. If you put on the news in the evening, you'll see Theresa May, Jeremy Corbyn and Tim Farron, won't you? The leaders are the ones who front up, who do the meetings and do the interviews. So it is here. And of course, the leaders then pay the price. In chapter 6, Stephen is stoned to death. In chapter 12, James will lose his life. From chapter 8, the good news is taken across the region because Christians are driven out of Jerusalem. The apostles remain in Jerusalem, so their role changes thereafter. But what about the apostles' role today? How do they lead in mission as far as we're concerned? Well, they lead by their writings. Jesus promised that they would have a special place in God's revelation, in the bringing of his word to his world. The Spirit worked in them so that on the one hand, they would remember what Jesus had taught them, and on the other hand, so that they could teach the churches in those early days just what they needed to hear, but also what the church throughout the years would need to hear. And so we learn what the good news is. We understand the opposition that it will receive. We hear about the dangers that will threaten the people of God, the threats of disunity and immorality. And we know what new believers need to be taught. All so that the good news of Jesus can reach the ends of the earth. Now today, sadly, many of those who would claim the title of Christian church have given up on the apostles and their teaching. Their desire is to be more culturally relevant, to more in tune with what people are thinking and saying around them today. And they have given up on what God has said through the apostles. And what we see from those people in those sorts of churches is that they are declining. Whereas those who are sticking with what the Bible teaches and what the apostles say and allowing the apostles to lead see their churches growing around the world. So let's make sure that we're those who hold on to the apostles' teaching, that we're those who listen to it, and that we're those who practice both their message and their ministry. And when the time comes for you to move on to another church, make sure that the church you choose is one where its ministry and message and mission are led by the apostles. And the mission will be led by the apostles. Secondly, the Spirit will empower believers to speak about Jesus. Verse 17, "And in the last days it shall be, God declares, that I will pour out my Spirit on all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy." In previous generations, the Spirit had been given to particular people at particular times for particular roles and responsibilities, prophets and kings and deliverers. But now you'll notice the Spirit is given to absolutely everybody. All who put their trust in Jesus receive the Spirit. And, verse 17, they will be given the power to prophesy. Now, what has just happened is that we've heard them talking about Jesus. In that instance, talking about Jesus to unbelievers. But from now on, that speaking about Jesus will happen within the community and to those outside the community. In the book of Revelation, we come across this verse, which rather supports what we're looking at here and have been seeing in Acts 2 so far. "For the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy." In other words, speaking about Jesus is what prophecy is all about. Now, there's talk here as well, you'll notice, of dreams and visions. And in the Old Testament, visions and dreams are a subset of prophecy. There'll be occasion instances in the Acts about visions, but they're exceptional, and dreams are not mentioned at all. But don't mishear me. This is not to say, and I guess many of us will have heard the stories, of people from other faiths, people from backgrounds where there is no freely available Bible to hand or gospel preaching to hand, where God has met people, spoken to them in dreams and drawn them to trust in him through that. Of course God can do that. But that is exceptional and not at all normative. We are very privileged. We hold a Bible in our hands. That is how God will speak to us. So Joel is saying that from now on, God's people will enjoy the gift of the Messiah and will be able to speak about Jesus to one another and to go beyond the community. And of course, we do that with one another as we share texts of verses we found helpful, as we send out a tweet of a particularly good, stimulating blog post that we've just read, as we listen to one another in our small groups and enjoy that mutual ministry of encouragement and being challenged. And as a community, we experience it together when we gather to listen to the Bible being taught as we're doing now. That's the way God shapes and equips and challenges and encourages us as a community together. And of course we do it when we speak to those who don't yet know and love the Lord Jesus about Jesus. So praise God for this gift to his people. We only sit here tonight because of that gift and because others faithfully exercised that gift. So let's take up the responsibility that goes with the privilege of speaking about Jesus within and outside our community. And wasn't it brilliant? The person who led the prayers tonight is from South Africa. The person who read the reading for us tonight is from Australia. What a great testimony to God keeping his promise. Even Australians and South Africans receive this gift. There's hope for us all. Now, of course, this may have a more serious implication for some of us, because it may mean that we have been so gifted, either with a teaching gift or with maybe an evangelistic gift, that we should be thinking about dedicating our whole lives to that gift in the service of others. Maybe that's something that you need to be praying about and thinking about for your future. Or maybe you've got a very strong sense that that is true of a friend here at St. John's. Well, tap them on the shoulder, tell them that. For God has sent his Spirit on his people to equip them for service, to equip them to fulfill his mission to his world. Verses 19 and 20. The mission will prepare people for the day of the Lord. And I will show wonders in the heavens above and signs on the earth below, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the day of the Lord comes, the great and magnificent day. I remember in my youth group days, we used to get terrifically excited if there was a very dramatic sky or maybe a red moon or the clouds went a particularly strange colour or it went unbelievably gloomy because of the clouds. Somebody would be bound to say, surely the end is coming, it must be soon. And somebody else would go, no, it's just another sunset, just another storm, nothing to worry about. Well, of course, both are true. Jesus hasn't come yet. It was obviously a run-up to the day of the Lord, correct? What Joel is doing, he's using prophetic language here, colourful, dramatic language, to describe the coming day of the Lord. And it is a great and magnificent day. It's a great and magnificent day because it's the day when Jesus will be revealed as King. It's a day when everything will be put right. It's a day when justice will be done. And it's a day when God's kingdom will come in all its glory. It's a great and magnificent day. And a day to which all believers look forward with joy and excitement. But on other occasions, and in other prophetic books, it's described as a great and terrible day. And it's a great and terrible day for those who don't love and serve our God and Father, those who have opposed the Lord Jesus, those who have lived their lives without any acknowledgement of him. So one day, two responses. Great and magnificent, great and terrible. A bit like last Friday. Last Friday was a great and magnificent day for all Chelsea fans because Chelsea beat West Brom and won the Premier League. But of course it was a great and terrible day for all Spurs fans, because our vanishingly slim hope of doing that was completely scuppered. A trivial example. Great and magnificent, great and terrible. Well, I hope this day is in your diary. I don't mean the date, because none of us knows the date. But I hope it's a day that you're looking forward to. I hope it's a day that you're prepared for and preparing for. There's no point in being denial about it. There's no point in saying, look, it won't happen, it's not real. you know, I can deny that June the 8th is going to be the day of the general election, but it is going to be the day of the general election, and it will soon be here. My denial makes no difference at all. So we are without excuse if we don't prepare for this day, just as we would and probably have done for our GCSEs and for our A-levels and for our driving theory test. We get ready, we prepare, don't we? Now, of course, not everyone takes a driving theory test, not everyone does GCSEs, not everyone does A-levels. But everyone will face the test of the day of the Lord. Everyone needs to be ready for this day, for standing before Jesus. So if everyone must be prepared, are you prepared? If you're faced with Jesus the judge, what will you say? What will your answer be as he asks how you've lived your life? Why should he let you into his heaven? Be prepared for this day. And the mission the church has is to ensure that people are prepared for this great and magnificent day. Finally, the mission will focus on the Lord, and it shall come to pass that everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. The good news is that God is there before us. The good news is that he has already given one so that we will be able to be prepared for that day. He hasn't left us in the lurch. He hasn't left us trying to search around for ourselves to find out what the answer might be. There is a given one who can rescue us from this great and terrible day and turn it into a great and magnificent day. And for the crowds listening to Peter, the question then was, well, who is this Lord? And Peter will go on to say, he is the Jesus who was recently crucified in this city. And so he remains for us today. He remains our hope in the face of the great and terrible day of the Lord. And we'll hear more as to how that was accomplished as we listen to Peter next time.